On today's College Football Inquirer, Brendan Sorsby, the Texas Tech quarterback, sues the NCAA after admitting he bet on his own team while in Indiana. Plus, the SCORE Act is dead, but could a bill in the Senate give the schools what they want? Or might the SEC and the Big Ten consider breaking away? Ross Dellinger had a very interesting column about that. We will discuss it all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is College Football Inquirer with Stephen Godfrey and Ross Dellinger. I am Andy Staples. Ross is in Southern California at the Big Ten meetings right now, but a lot of the action in college football taking place in Lubbock, Texas, because that is where Texas Tech quarterback Brendan Sorsby has sued the NCAA. We thought this was coming, but it is very interesting because there was a lot of documentation in that lawsuit, including an affidavit from Brendan Sorsby where he explained while at Indiana, he did bet on Indiana football games, and he also explained that while at Cincinnati, he bet on pretty much everything. Turkish basketball, obscure tennis doubles matches, and of course, the Nathan's hot dog eating contest.
Who among us? Who among us?
Good thing he's in treatment. Not a laughing matter in a way. If you're betting on those things and betting 40, 50 times a day, it seems to be you have a problem.
Yeah, this is, Andy, I'm going to kind of push this into a little bit more of a serious area. That you guys remember the Charles Bediako case, which feels like 1,000 years ago, which I believe was like 3 months ago or something. We have kind of established a line on this show of things that are debatable, the inevitable march towards economic progress in college sports. In other words, things that are going to happen in the modern age that you can't really help. And if you want to still be a fan of this, you're going to have to learn to tolerate. And then there's that rare few news stories where people are saying, no, I do not tolerate this. The Bediako thing, I kind of felt like came to pass, and all right, that feels like a bridge too far when it comes to eligibility. We don't want former pros going back to college. That felt like a consensus. I'm a little alarmed here, although I'm not going to try and argue this on a moral ground, but I'm a little alarmed here that I'm seeing the same moral consensus against Sorsby because he bet on his own team.
Why are you alarmed about that? That seems like a fairly normal reaction.
Because I think that is a normal reaction. But I think we're losing a lot here with the context and the nuance of this, because this guy was betting on, you know, Turkish fistfights in the middle of the night or whatever.
Well, like, this is what his lawyers are arguing, and this is what makes this case very interesting, because this is a discussion that needs to be had. It will open a pretty necessary discussion. His lawyers arguing that the NCAA exacerbates the problem by being in business with gambling companies. I mean, they sell real time data to gambling companies. That's a revenue stream for them. Various schools have deals with gambling outfits. The sports media that cover college sports, including like me at On3.
Yeah. We did it on this show too.
We take those ads too.
Yeah. So, no, this is a little scary for me. One, because as Sorsby said, or as they filed a lawsuit, these were minor bets and Indiana sucked at the time. So it wasn't really affecting the outcome. I don't feel like I'm being hyperbolic by saying this. This is a little bit like if every time you turned on an NCAA basketball game or a college football playoff game and you saw billboards and lower third chyrons and commercials for crack. And the NCAA is brought to you by crack. Crack is great. You try crack today with the code CRACK30.
There is a vice element.
Yes.
That every time you turn on a sporting event, you see ads for. It's called beer. And there was a time when we made it illegal, and
I'm not talking about prohibition, Andy, but what I am talking about is sort of the normal empathetic response to, hey, this is digital crack. You can smoke it today with code NCAA30. And then when one of the people involved in the program that sells you the crack gets addicted to the crack, we wag our fingers at them and say, for shame, how dare you.
But here's the thing.
This is the integrity of the sport.
Back to the beer ads. You're not allowed to play drunk on most teams. Is it the beer company's fault?
No, so, I'm not blaming the gambling company. I am not saying we should outlaw anything.
Is it the school's fault for taking the beer ads?
Again, not blaming anybody. My concern is not saying don't take the money. Every one of us here.
But you do have to have a line. somewhere.
I do. And I think the line is he was not influencing the games. He wasn't involved in the games, the ones that where he was a player. And I do think that what scares me about this is that we're moving towards a territory where we're saying, hey, this is the hard line. And no matter what, we're not going to look at a treatment solution. We're not going to acknowledge the byproduct that we're creating. And this was not Pete Rose. This was not the Alabama baseball coach. This was not an orchestrated plot to make money. This is someone with an addiction problem, with a dopaminergic problem on constantly trying to get that sort of mental high. And I think he should be helped. Mm-hmm. I don't think his career should be scuttled. You know,
is exactly what the NCAA or what the Sorsby attorneys have argued.
And
exactly.
What's funny, yeah, I know. And I know I'm kind of coming down on the defendant's side, I guess, but I go back to the big, bold, emotional pleas of Nick Saban. When Nick Saban was still a head coach, guys, and he was talking about, what do y'all want me to do? Kick him out forever? Remember, he was at Alabama, and Andy, you'll probably remember this off the top of your head. There was a Michigan State player that he had, and you know, he talked about, hey, that guy became a good citizen, and look at what he does now, and he owns a business and all this. You guys, these are kids. We've lost that now for some reason with this gambling thing where we want to throw this guy into prison and toss
the
key.
Well, no, it's not that. It is that society has never tolerated people gambling on the events that they're involved in.
Yeah.
Never. And there's a reason for that. It's a business reason. Because if the public, if the consumer thinks the games are fixed, if the consumer thinks that the people playing have some sort of wager on the outcome, then the business falls apart. It is the high wire that all of these leagues are walking right now by doing this.
I get the concern, but at the same time, I'm a little shocked that people have such little empathetic awareness.
I think the argument that he's got, well, obviously, I was at Big Ten stuff, I didn't read the whole complaint, but like the argument obviously he's making is, you know, he suffers from this addiction. But there another argument to be made, even though, you know, he bet on his own game, I don't think he played in his own game.
No, he didn't even
dress
for that game. The Hunter Deckers one is the closest case. Hunter Deckers placed a $15 bet on Iowa State to beat Oklahoma State in 2021. And he was the backup to Brock Purdy that season, but he did not play in that game.
Did you say $15?
$15. And he was banned.
Which is integrity of the game, guys. Hey, and don't worry about that $72 million buyout to the coach. A $15 bet is going to break the integrity of the game.
I think $15 is probably three times the amount of Sorsby's like normal average bet. Most of them were like under five.
That's how much a bottle of water costs at the NCAA owned tournament games. Like, are we serious with this?
Hey, we don't unit shame here anyway.
This is insane.
Not at all.
Absolutely
at
all.
So what do we think is going to happen here?
Part of their argument also is that he has admitted to this.
Yeah.
And the NCAA is still asking for more. Like, we need an in-person interview. We need your phone logs. We need your Venmo records. He's like, I did it. You got me.
Right.
Can you make a decision, please?
One of the things that I find interesting, my Phantom Island co-host, Ryan Nanny, brought this up. He, a lawyer with a legal background. I think the NCAA has a ton of anxiety right now. And it's less about this kind of nonsense of integrity of the game, because all three of us can point out 10 ways the integrity of the game has been compromised for 30, 40 years in different manners and et cetera, and competitive balance and money. I think it's that they had really, their dragnet for monitoring this kind of stuff is clearly broken, because the only reason we know about this is because Sorsby went into rehab. Like, this was
That's not true. He went into rehab after they alerted Texas Tech.
Tip. Yeah, they got a NCAA got a tip, but and then pursued and then alerted Texas Tech.
He was doing this for so long that he did not, like, there was none of the stuff the NCAA put in place caught him.
Correct.
This is his third institution. He went to he went to the rehab moment where this can happen consistently. Because what we heard about was, we're going to IP track, we're going to geofence, we're going to have all this. And like, clearly that system does not work. That system, it does not crush these guys.
I think there's evidence that it works, but you can't. It's impossible to catch everybody.
Ross,
doing
a 19-year-old can get a VPN in 5 minutes.
Yeah,
this is insane.
Yeah, involved. I mean, it's because they have a lot of data on how many players they track and bets they track. But it's just there's so many players and it's so easy on your phone. And this was a topic of discussion here at Big Ten meetings last night. In some of the athletic directors and coaches were saying how, you know, if they were 19 and 20 and 21 again, if they had access to betting on their phone, that they would be much less lighter in the wallet.
Because the leadership is actually thinking like a college student for once, because all the
fun trips they took to the bar and can just pick up their phone and make a bet if that yes. were available to them. That is a problem, and they would have had a problem with it. And I think we're seeing one right now. What's going to be fascinating to me, and I think we maybe discussed this the last time we talked about this story, is there's probably better than 50% odds that he gets granted an injunction by a local judge. In fact, we've already seen the photo.
We have the obligatory photo of the judge supporting the home team.
Yes, guns up by the judge. Yes,
Philip Hayes, the judge in the Soresby case, 2 degrees from Texas Tech. He has an undergraduate and a law degree, and yes, he is with the mascot doing guns up in that photo that you've seen. The Ole Miss judge, or the judge in the Trinidad Chambliss case, Ole Miss law grad, I believe, ruled for Trinidad Chambliss. But the judge in the Charles Bediako case, Daniel Pruitt, had an undergrad degree from Alabama and said, you know what? I don't want to be the one who erases this line. And then the Joey Aguilar judge
in Tennessee,
2 degrees
yeah.
from Tennessee,
yes, right.
denied.
So, I'm really over this. I'm over this talking point, and I want to be really clear. It's been pointed out with a lot of mirth in the media about the partisanship of some of these judges. Do you know who seeks out partisan judges? The president of the United States. Okay.
Well, and also
this is the no.
Lives
hang on,
in a college town.
This is the same concept that everyone in Congress uses to push through legislation. They find sympathetic judges. They try mm-hmm. them where they can. Good lawyers yep. do this. This has become this weird cudgel from NCAA sympathetic people that like, oh, of course they're going to get the fan. Hey, this is how the judicial system in America works, and we designed it this way.
Well Godfrey, he also said it in a roundtable. The president, he literally said yeah. he's going to push through an executive order. And find a friendly judge.
Yes.
He literally said it publicly.
I live in a small college town. You're not going to find a judge in this town that's going to say bad things about the University of Florida.
Sure.
But it doesn't mean they're always going to rule in favor of the University of Florida.
Yeah. And if you live in
because everything they deal with touches it.
Well, they're trying to be fair.
It's the economic
they're trying
engine
to be
of the
fair,
town.
Then
yeah, when
you
lived,
think so,
when you
right.
lived in North Carolina in the 1990s, it was really hard to find a judge who was going to impartially rule against big tobacco. This has existed since we built this system of governance.
So,
and I'm just tired of this whole like, well, he's a sports fan. Shocking. So shocked.
Yeah, I don't assume that he's going to rule in favor of Brendan Soresby because he went to Texas Tech.
No, I think it's
better than 50% he does. I'm just basing it on state. And what I was trying to get to is what happens then? Because mm-hmm. we've never seen a situation like this one.
If he grants
where it's gambling involved. Yeah, if he gets the injunction.
And he plays.
He plays. Who does he play?
Soresby? He plays mm-hmm. for Texas Tech. What do you mean?
Yeah, who does Texas Tech play if they're
Cincinnati.
Playing in an eligible player? So I think there's going to be a real question from a group of schools on if you choose to play. And this was, by the way, this was sort of talked about in the Bediako case by several SEC schools, I think, in meetings is, hey, you're playing an ineligible player, whether a judge said it or not, we're not going to play you. This is going to come up if Soresby's granted the injunction.
It's come
gonna
up
be a fascinating argument.
I think it's the discretion of the institution. And I think based off of the public profile and the aggressively outward behavior of Texas Tech, in particular boosters who are involved at the presidential level of influencing the sport, that Texas Tech would act with a certain level of confidence and agency in playing whoever they thought would give them the best chance to win and dealing with the ramifications in a fake NCAA world of bylaws after the fact.
Yeah.
Call this a calculated hypothesis.
The way these injunctions get written, essentially, if you then don't play him, you are going against what a court of law told you. If you say, no, we still think he's ineligible. If you're
Texas Tech wouldn't do that. other schools would not play them.
But they also, like, okay, if you're Cincinnati, if you're Iowa State, can you go against what the court said?
Yeah.
And does it count as a forfeit? You can't force Texas Tech to deny a lawful order.
Right. And does it count as a forfeit, or has the Big 12, all the other 15 schools come together and made some kind of decision together?
I mean, they're going to have to. If he's granted this injunction, the Big 12 schools are going to have to figure it out and make peace with it.
So a kid with an addiction issue is going to force forfeits in games, just so we're clear.
There's not going to be any forfeits. What we choose to enforce.
15 schools saying we're not played. There wouldn't be any forfeits. Yeah, I don't think.
They're not going to say we wouldn't play Texas Tech.
No.
Because
there's no way.
Guess what? That's at this point with Texas Tech's roster, that's their biggest game of the year.
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
If you have any hope of making the college football playoff in the Big 12, you need to play and beat Texas Tech.
Yeah. Yep. So that's the other piece of this. I mean, if he's denied, he's going to the supplemental draft. Texas Tech rolls with Will Hammond, who was their backup last year. He tore his ACL. He probably isn't ready week one, week two. You probably see him come back week three against Houston. So if you're BYU, if you are, you know, Kansas State under new management with Colin Klein, if you are Houston, who we think is going to be very good this year,
yeah,
then you got a chance right here where maybe that Mega Bucks roster is not as bulletproof as you think. So I like Ross said, Ross, you're saying better than 50% chance. I think it's better than 50% chance he's denied, but I don't think it's that lopsided one way or the other. Like
are you saying that because just of like the long-standing principle and integrity of people have around sports gambling, like we just talked about?
Basically. Yeah, I think it's the same. It's what Godfrey was talking about at the beginning.
Yeah.
There's a line that most people define as this is the line.
Right.
And
right.
That spot for this particular subject matter is betting on your own team.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Even though you weren't playing. And it was two teams ago. Like, okay.
Yeah.
If we establish this precedent, he was betting
Indiana overs. He was betting quarterback overs.
Which is a sign of addiction. Okay.
Also that he wants his buddies to do well in the quarterback room.
Exactly.
Godfrey, what do you think the penalty should be? Or what the rules should be? You think the rules should be changed? Like they were going to change it, right? Last year they changed it and then overturned it.
Before we talk about penalties, I want to talk about what is the NCAA or the Big 12, or any of these other power conferences who are richer than 4 foot up a bull's ass, going to do to help educate their players and actually create treatment and prevention. I want to talk about what we can do in the beginning of this instead of punishing
the kid. This is the argument here that the NCAA, which says we're here to support the student athlete. This is what...
Which has always been a lie.
Argued. Yeah. You're here to support the student athlete, then why are you punishing when you should be helping? Now... If the players were, I don't know, employees, you would not have as much responsibility to
stole my line.
Help them because that's what the money's for. And you could make rules about how to govern and control said employees.
Yeah. Yes, you could.
Which, by the way, is the reason they were going to loosen the rules on gambling for players. They were going to let them gamble on the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball because... That seemed an awful lot like the level of control you have over an employee telling you you can and can't gamble on these things. And they're not employees, according to the NCAA and the schools.
Do you guys remember when Rick Neuheisel got in trouble for a March Madness pool?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. The arc of absurdity. We live through a time in history where there's an inflation of absurdity. And you look backwards and everything looks quaint. Like in politics and in the world. And now
I know Rick, he's still pissed about that and I don't blame him.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, that kneecapped his career.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, just 5 years ago, it wasn't legal to pay college athletes. Just 1 year ago, it wasn't legal for schools to pay college athletes. How about that?
Yeah. And imagine what you'll know tomorrow. Sorry.
I know. Imagine what will happen this time next year, which we're going to talk about probably at some point. Yeah, here in this show.
Well, now we wait. There will be an injunction hearing I would assume in the next few weeks. He has to make a decision by June 22nd about whether he's going to enter the supplemental draft in the NFL. He will get taken in the supplemental draft. I don't know exactly how high a draft pick a team would be willing to spend on him. He will get taken by somebody, though, just based on how the scouts feel about him. So that's the thing. If he's denied, he will be in the NFL in 2026, and then they'll have to decide what they want to do about that. But we will find out, I would say, probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks what happens here. So we just wait, and I'm sure that hearing will be covered very thoroughly, also by us. But let us move to another place where they have lots of hearings and talk a lot. Don't often get much done. The halls of Congress. We'll be right back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and Ross Dellinger has been very busy patrolling the halls of Congress. He's patrolling the Big Ten meetings this week, but Ross is. Do you have a congressional minute for us, or do we?
No. I didn't. I didn't write one.
This is
one,
a congressional half hour.
Yeah, it's a congressional hour. Yeah, I actually.
Oh boy.
I think I may have texted y'all like late last week or Friday or over the weekend. A congressman texted me and said, "Your congressional minute's going to have to be a congressional hour to explain everything that's happening." You know, yesterday here at Big Ten. At the end of the day, you know, people text you or whatever. Hey, how's Big Ten going? What's going on? What did they do today? I'm like, I don't know. I was on the phone with people that live in D.C. and work in D.C. while I'm here in L.A. For the Big Ten. So I didn't get a lot done when it comes to the Big Ten because I was trying to track what the hell was going on Capitol Hill, which, of course, was a lot was going on, but nothing's getting done, which is kind of a theme. For things in the Hill. I think we talked last week when I had my congressional minute about the focus shouldn't be as much on score because one, it was dicey on if it was going to be, if it was going to pass, and two, it was never going to get through the Senate as currently written, that the focus should be in the Senate where Maria Cantwell and Ted Cruz are negotiating over a separate bill. There's some confusion there. The SCORE Act is not the same thing that Maria
there's
Cantwell
some confusion.
And Ted Cruz
there's a little bit of confusion.
The SCORE Act came out of the House of Representatives.
Thing. Right, it's a different thing. And so the SCORE Act died, died. It's not going to be
SCORE
brought
Act,
back for a fourth time, I don't
the
believe.
The SCORE Act, which has been zombified countless times, right, Ross? That we have been told
the
is the most,
three times.
Most important thing and going to be the congressional, going to be the governmental solution to all of college sports' problems. Which some of us met with a level of criticism the entire time, has now finally had a bullet put in it. Only because there's another bill that we're being told, no, this one is going to do it, even though we still haven't seen the contents of said bill.
The bullet was funny, though, Godfrey.
Well, the bullet was interesting. Yeah, the bullet got political, if y'all saw the Congressional Black Caucus statement.
So here's the thing. The last time, Ross had to go to Capitol Hill because it was going to be put on the floor.
He's
at the Capitol building. And Ross had said the day before, and I had chuckled, because he's like, well, they think they've got the Congressional Black Caucus on board. This is not yesterday. This is months ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
December.
I find that very difficult to believe, given that they're just giving the schools everything they want. My guess is they probably won't.
Yes.
And guess what? They didn't, and they pulled it.
Yep.
Then, Ross, have some of these people been kicked in the face by a horse?
I don't know, maybe.
I don't understand. Like,
why,
they
maybe.
Went, changed very little, brought it back, and the same people that didn't want to get behind it before, that they needed to get behind it, were like, yeah, we're still not behind it. Like, why are they surprised?
And also, why is this any different? Like, whatever we're about to talk about, but the hopes of any sort of order being restored, according to certain people in college sports, rest with Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell. Why is this any different? And why should we not laugh and brush this off like we have the SCORE Act for the last 2-3 years?
We can definitely laugh and brush it off. We could.
There's no qualifier. It's going to be better.
We definitely can.
This one is bipartisan, at least.
It's definitely, I mean, it is. Look,
Theoretically, there's some compromise going on.
So it's both effective. It's both effective political parties.
Both effective branches of sides of the aisle. Oof. Yeah. So there is there is confusion, and I understand it. Of why there's a thought of, and I've got texts even from administrators this morning and calls of like, wait, if the SCORE Act died because the CBC wouldn't get on board, does that mean the Cantwell-Cruz Senate bill is going to also die because the CBC didn't get on board? Like, are they going to, not necessarily, but perhaps, we don't know until
right,
it gets to the point.
We don't know what it's going to look like.
Right. We haven't
seen the
text.
The fact
that
Maria Cantwell is a co-sponsor means it will probably look significantly different.
It will. And one big difference, and I think I can say this, even though they're not done negotiating, and maybe they won't ever get done negotiating, I guess we'll see. But the biggest difference is the addressing of the employment status, right? I mean, you've got a SCORE Act, you got a bill in the SCORE Act that had an anti-employment clause. It prohibited athletes from being deemed employees. Maria Cantwell and most Democrats are not going to agree with that. And that's, you know, there was a lot of politics involved with the college or the CBC's announcement, the Black Caucus's announcement that goes to redistricting that's going on right now, which is a whole other topic that I'm sure Godfrey has plenty of opinions on, and certainly a lot of people do. It's a divisive issue that's probably not great in the grand scheme of our landscape of America. But the Black Caucus certainly used that, right, as saying, you know, the SEC wants this. Well, the SEC needs to address what's happening in its own states. And they sent a letter, the Black Caucus, to Greg Sankey, Jim Phillips, and Charlie Baker about redistricting. So, it's wild times on the Hill.
So all we need is the Congressional Black Caucus to come out in support of a bill co-authored by Ted Cruz. I'm gonna go ahead and take a nap, and when you guys are done, let me know.
Yeah, it does not seem
well said.
Like there's a lot here, and plus there's a lot of other stuff going on, and plus their clock is ticking.
It's a war
because the midterm elections are this fall.
Yeah,
and if they go to recess without this thing done, it's like me in elementary school. Once I went to recess, I was done for the day. If they go to recess, they're done.
Well, and, you know, when I try to explain a little bit on social of, hey, like these two bills aren't the same, right? There's one in the Senate, and now kind of all of college athletic leadership hopes rest in the Senate bill, not just for this Congress, but for a while. Because the House is going to flip almost certainly from Republican to Democrat, and the Democrats will be taking over this issue, and many of the Democrats in the House believe that this should be set up a drastically different way, and will take the SCORE Act and tear it up.
Why? I don't understand the urgency here. I just want to review the landscape here. So there's this pressure to quote unquote get something done because the idiot God King had a committee of a bunch of nonsense people who work for the Yankees apparently and said we need to fix college sports because my approval rating sucks. You have a second term president with an underwater approval rating. You have a midterm election on the horizon, Ross, as you've illustrated, which is going to change the balance of power, at least in one part of our government. Why would Cantwell even be motivated right now to try and push through joint legislation? If anything, you sit on your hands and wait until you have more of an advantage in a couple months. This doesn't make sense from a tactical standpoint either.
Well, this is a great question. It's a good question. I think she wants to address, and I think it is being addressed in the bill, is a lot of like the pro-athlete benefit section. Right, the medical care
and
the long-term health,
if you
want to
be whatever, someone who puts your name on something like this, there will not be something like this if it all flips, because the people in charge of college sports will back away because
as
trying
we're
to
talk
get Congress
about
to
later
quote-unquote save
right.
them will not get them what they want. Let us talk about the Yankees letterhead, by the way. So there was a letter put out on Monday night. The headliner of the signatories is Randy Levine, the president of the New York Yankees, because he is a member of this this presidential committee. But on Yankees letterhead, imploring Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell to get this thing done It's time for all interested parties to set aside past differences and coalesce around legislation in order to get to the president's desk without delay. The funniest comment that I saw about this, and I wish I had the person's name to give them proper credit, was, you're going to really struggle to get the SEC folks on board sending something on Yankees.
The letterhead. Yankees.
Maybe it's Braves just... letterhead. You have a chance.
Yeah, maybe. I don't want to knock on wood or anything, but it's, yeah. If you're a sports franchise, stay the hell out of this. By the way, I'm sure there's some corners of the New York Yankees right now who are like, you did what on our letterhead? You have lent our brand to what?
Also, New York Yankees, probably famously anti-salary cap.
Yeah, just a little bit. I was going to get there, Andy, but thank you for just cutting me up. Yeah. You know, when it comes to restricting paying people, I think of the New York Yankees. maybe if there was somewhere in the memo where they were talking about, like, you can't have a mustache, I would understand that. Absolutely asinine nonsense. I don't know if I can flog this much harder, but I don't expect anything to happen. And I really am hung up now. I don't know. I feel like I should get an award or a badge or some sort of special effect or something, because it was like 35 segments on the SCORE Act and I got all of them and I was right. But now, just for the sake of changing the conversation, I really don't understand the urgency now. I understand that from one side, I definitely do. But now, if anything, for a bipartisan effort, yeah. if I'm the current minority in the halls of Congress, I'm gonna take a knee for a little bit.
Well, Godfrey, get back to your question of why Cantwell would be doing this. One, I think she wants to address certain pro-athlete benefit in a bill, which they have. Two, she's from the state of Washington, where Washington State was famously left behind.
Sure.
In the Pac-12 implosion. And I do think that will be sort of addressed in legislation. I think she wants to prevent that from happening again.
That's impossible.
To any other, I'm aware.
I love the Cougs. I'm Mr. Yeah, G5. Yeah. That's not possible. This is where,
Old right, Crimson.
Andy, this yes, is where my capitalist part. Look, here, I'll do it from this side yep. of the microphone now. Okay, look, I love Group O football. I love the FCS. I do. I care about that more than anybody I know in the working media. What happened to Wazoo is really, really, really sad. It is also unavoidable the way that we are growing and changing the sport. And so I cannot be hypocritical and sit here and say, well, I support Cantwell and her crusade, even though I love that fan base. I think it's one of the best in college football. What happened was a matter of economics, an inevitable evolution towards a Super League that we have. There's no way of curtailing that. It's never going to stop. This is a professional sport, and I feel for her, but she needs to take a knee.
It's the same situation. Because now they've taken up the mantle of we gotta limit this coach pay. No, you're not gonna do that either.
Anytime someone brings that up, Andy, I know that whatever they're advocating for is never gonna happen. It's like the clearest canary in the coal mine. If someone says we're gonna limit coach pay, I know for a fact we all have friends in our contact list in our phone right now who are gonna make damn sure that never happens because their business would die overnight.
Well, and it's if you take it into the wider world, it's. Are you going to limit CEO compensation? No, you're not.
No, of course not.
You're not.
Right.
No.
Right. Right.
So it's should not you? Is worth it, discussing.
Should is a great question, but this is where I get myopic on quote unquote my side of the fence politically. This is where I turn around to the hardcore beanie wearing crowd in the coffee house and I'm like, you guys are full of it. It's never going to happen. Okay. Unless you bring back the guillotine in mass, like people are going to get paid exorbitant amounts of money because we built the entire American ideology around that. And unfortunately, the Washington... So what are we going to do? Are we going to force ULM into the SEC? Like, look, this is the stuff I love, guys, but we have to be realistic
about this.
By the way, War Damn Hawk. I mean, all day. I think they might have some concerns from a personnel standpoint if they had to play an SEC schedule this year.
Slightly.
Yeah.
Slightly. But they think they can write legislation in a way that would make that more difficult to happen.
This
than
is
what happened.
And this
to
is why
Washington
you avoid
State.
Government and so, you just get the shit done on your own.
Yeah, it's
I'm with the government and quote. I'm
we,
here
we
to help.
Bringing up the 9 most terrifying words in the English language. I'm from the government and I'm here to help. This is a good segue.
Yeah.
Because I think Godfrey is right.
Mm.
I think Godfrey's been right all along.
Say it slower.
And that means.
And they have to fix their own problem? Is that what you're about to say?
They're going
to
need a plan B. Yeah.
Let's go.
Unfortunately, as we're about to discuss, the fixes of that problem will probably not make a lot of people real happy. But
they might have an even dumber idea. We'll talk about it next.
I have faith.
We are back at College Football Inquirer. We've talked about Congress and what may or may not happen there. If nothing happens there, which feels like the most likely outcome, the schools will have to figure things out on their own. And Ross Dellinger has been all over this because some of the potential Plan B options are fairly nuclear, Ross, and starting to feel a little more real to people. And you're getting some very interesting comments off and on the record.
My story Monday on the College Sports Commission and the financial situation that's happening among the four conferences included some pretty spicy, even on the record. People put their name with it, which you could tell, which you'd know if people were frustrated if they're started to put their name with it and say things like, the House settlement is an abject disaster. We've reached the point where, or let's rewrite or rethink the House settlement. A lot going on. I don't know where to start here, but you know what? I'll start with money.
Let's start with the Big Ten and the SEC potentially breaking away.
I'm going to get the idea here. I think, but that's because of money, right? I think when you look at the money that's been submitted in the system, the College Sports Commission, the over-the-cap NIL, mm-hmm. And that's really the genesis of my story, because you look at the figures and it tells a picture, it paints a picture, a very clear picture, that 80% of the money submitted, over $100 million, is with the SEC in Big Ten, which just illustrates to you the financial gap. And of course, that money also, as an aside, is stuck in the system right now, is under review or has been rejected. So players are not getting the money they were promised. Mostly by the Big Ten and SEC. And so the Big Ten and SEC are saying, we want to change the College Sports Commission rules because we need to pay our players and all this money is getting held up. And as you might imagine, the Big 12 and ACC are saying, you promised this money when you weren't supposed to. So we don't think anything should change in the College Sports
Sounds Commission. Sounds like divorce parenting.
Are you saying the Big Ten and the SEC are dad trying to
buy the kids love?
What do you mean you gave an 11-year-old a jet ski? We don't even live near a lake. Is this because of your new girlfriend?
So because of this is the latest disagreement among the leagues. And it's a disagreement that I think may be just yet another step down the road to where we've all predicted this would probably go, which is a sort of split off, splintering, breakaway, whatever you want to call it, from the NCAA or the two biggest and richest conferences. I think that's going to be discussed here in LA at the Big Ten meetings. And I know it will be discussed as probably agenda item number one next week for the SEC.
Ross, we're not talking about one clarifying question. Big Ten together, yeah, wait, Super League.
One tiny question. Yeah, we're talking about football or all sports?
Well, I mean, that is a question that has to be answered, but okay. I don't think you can just take one sport.
Okay.
I don't think you can.
I'm just asking.
Andy, you asked another good question of what was the question you asked?
We're not talking SEC and Big Ten together. They're the new Super League, right?
That would be something separate. Called collusion, and you would get sued into oblivion. Yeah. So this is a separate league self-governance conference model where they would go off separately. Now, that's not to say that they wouldn't play competitively against each other eventually, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
But they certainly would start it off with that.
Not right away if they don't want to get sued.
Yeah. I mean, look, the model is the one we've been talking about this for a decade.
Yes.
Right? Because everybody could see it coming. Now we're like in the middle of the fourth quarter of the game, it feels like.
Andy, do you have your copy of the club?
And your story was really good laying this out, because it makes sense from a legal standpoint why the SEC would want to just be the SEC and the Big Ten would want to just be the Big Ten, because at that point, the other schools can't sue you on antitrust grounds, because if you're the SEC, you can point at the Big Ten and say, that's why we don't have market power. And
yes,
so don't look at us.
And that's the whole reason, right? People listening probably like, well, why? But why are they splitting away? What, remind us? Well, one of the reasons is they're small enough that they believe that they could, evade antitrust, evade lawsuits and challenges, and so they could set their own rules and policy and have some kind of regulation, probably some kind of harder cap, eligibility cap. They could just make all their own rules that the NCAA is trying to make for years.
If they wanted to,
yeah.
And bingo, they can employ the athletes and collectively bargain, at least eventually.
Yeah, it's a pro model.
Here's the thing about it, and so the Ivy League is actually what has emboldened them, because the Ivy League won a case where athletes brought suit, said your rule against athletic scholarships is collusion, and the Ivy League said, hey, look at all these other leagues that give athletic scholarships. You have the choice to go there if you want. You are not being denied the option to do that by us. And they won.
Yeah.
And so that would probably work, except here's the problem, and here's why it won't happen.
Okay.
If you are the SEC and you go, we're just going to be the SEC and we're just going to play against each other and we're going to have an SEC tournament.
Okay.
At the end of the season, and the SEC champion is we're going to consider them the greatest of all football programs.
But, English soccer, continue.
But they can't, but the problem is there's no UEFA. Like, they're not going to play. They're not going to play the Big Ten champ, at least not at first, because you don't want to get sued.
At least until the money shows up. Continue.
The Big Ten and the SEC suddenly become less valuable television properties.
Mm.
So we go back to the original solution then, Andy, which is that we have to find alignment within a certain group of parties that we're discussing where they can have a shared rule set for things like compensation or NIL in this case,
mm-hmm.
while also doing the sort of ripping off the Band-Aid and calling a spade a spade. I don't know how many metaphors I can use where, hey, if the Big Ten and the SEC want to do this, either we agree upon a number that the Big 12 can have spitting distance towards in the ACC, or we don't, but we also have to separate from the rest of these schools. Should not have
to
function.
Agree that you're not gonna sue them because
right. And
so,
but also you are separating essentially from what is known as Division One. Like we're gonna abandon that nonsense as well.
Right. And one more potential difficulty if the SEC and the Big Ten were to go it alone. Right now, you have the NCAA that you can hold up as the boogeyman. If you're the SEC and Ole Miss can come to Greg saying, he'd be like, the NCAA is hassling us, man. We don't like it when the NCAA hassles us, man. Yep. And we're gonna tell Trinidad Shambliss to sue them. If you are the ones making the rules and enforcing the rules, if you, the SEC, are doing this, or if you, the Big Ten, are doing this, guess what? The second you have a situation that goes the wrong way for a particular school, they're not going to sue the NCAA anymore. They're going to sue you.
Yeah, no, you have a Roger Goodell dynamic of ask fans in New Orleans how they feel about Roger Goodell. Ask fans in New England how they feel about Roger Goodell.
Yeah.
The brand.
So you have to decide if you're ready for that.
The brand becomes the boogeyman. And that's one thing that I don't think they're ready for.
Yeah. You have to decide if you're ready for that. But so this brings us to a really interesting quote from Iowa State Athletic Director Jamie Pollard. And I want to thank Cyclone Fanatic for posting this video of Jamie Pollard. And here is the quote. The four commissioners spent a lot of money creating the CSC. Then to have two of the conferences not want to adhere to it is perplexing to me, because then why did we spend the money? If you didn't want rules, why did you create this entity? Which, by the way, is something I asked Brian Seely about from the CSC. And he was equally curious. That's what's frustrating to me. The same people that say they want rules only want rules if they don't apply to them. I said it 3 years ago, let them break away. I would turn it around and say, we should break away from them. Let them go, but they have to go in all their sports and see how fun it is to play baseball and softball and track when it's just the 20 of you. That's what I think we should do. But I'm one person, and you know that's probably a little more draconian, but that's how I feel about it. Let's quit talking about it, quit threatening, go do it. But if you're going to do it, then you don't just get to do it in football and then keep all your other sports with us. No, take them all, see how fun it is. Now,
man,
ever wanted to watch someone cut off their nose despite their face in real time? That's what this was.
Your mark is going to kick his ass.
It got, let's just say, attention at the highest levels of the Big Ten here at meetings last night. And I think Jamie's talking about 3 years ago, he said that, and he did. I remember it. Mm-hmm. It was right around the time, it was about 2.5 years ago, it was right around the time that the College Football Playoff was negotiating a new contract and the Big Ten and SEC threatened to leave. And because of it, all the other leagues gave them more money and more power to change or not change playoff format. We're going to look back years from now. In fact, when I was at ACC meetings last week, an ACC athletic director said this to me, that we will look back decades from now and point to that moment, March 2024, when the other leagues sort of bent the knee to the SEC and Big Ten because they threatened to leave and they gave them all this money and all this authority over the playoff, that was sort of one of the big steps into what we're talking about now.
But here's the thing. That was always going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's so.
Which is why Jamie and others said, like, let him go.
Yeah, he says, let him go. Here's the problem. They're going to win.
Yeah.
They have what everybody wants and you don't.
I kind of support him, though, because he said the thing everybody already knows.
And no, it's everyone's afraid to say. Feet. I get it, and I admire it, but it's also not realistic. He's saying, let them play basketball and baseball without us, the Big 12, and without the ACC. Guess what?
Bro,
Big West, the Mountain West, the Pac-12, they'll all be like, we'd love to play with you. Please give us some money.
The D1 baseball top 25? I don't know if I'd do that, man, because honestly, like, the SEC is the only time I would cape for the SEC. Like, the SEC is college baseball, and there's a handful of mid-majors that are really good, like Coastal Carolina and Southern Miss and stuff, but like, no one's going to miss you in these sports that you think they are. I think that's Andy's point.
Yeah.
They could do this.
It's the truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, would you miss the Big 12 in basketball, in men's basketball? Absolutely.
Yeah, but the basketball thing is the one that's kind of been in the back of my head as we've discussed this stuff. Obviously, we're a football show, and everything is viewed through a football lens, both financially and I would say like in terms of the American consumer and viewer. But as usual, a lot of the stuff that we're hypothesizing about right now would maybe not destroy college basketball. I think that's a bit too far, but severely change it for the significantly worse.
Would radically alter it.
Yes, for the
radically
worse.
Alter it.
It would be a much poorer sport in terms of product and engagement and all of that stuff. Baseball is a bad example. Olympic sports, I would probably defer to someone who has more expertise. The sports are already more fragmented than I think Pollard realizes, but I also understand let me go through the quote for a second, and this is like a little existential. If you're an athletic director at a mid to lower end Big 12 school financially, and you're in Ames, Iowa, how exhausting must it be to continue to try and chase at the heels of these giants financially, dealing with transfers, dealing with how your brand is represented, dealing with access to a playoff? Must be absolutely numbing.
You just lost your best coach in the history of your football program to Penn State, and there was really nothing you could do about it.
And there probably never will be. And so for him to come out and in a moment of exasperation, look, there's a lack of tact in some of the quote that you read, but the sentiment is honest, and I appreciate that, which is that at what point are we going to stop saying Penn State and Iowa State are the same thing?
But it's admirable, but I don't know if it helps Iowa State.
What does?
Because nothing.
This is the existential. No, Andy, this is like on my other show, I have people write in every single week, and the burning crux of concern about this sport does not come from people who cheer for Penn State or Florida or LSU or Texas.
Sure.
Or Michigan. It is Virginia Tech. It is Iowa State. It is North Carolina State. It is these people caught in this existential Mendoza line of, are we going to survive the next comet that comes down to Earth? And these people...
And guess what?
What?
It doesn't matter who those people are. We spend a lot of time on this show talking about a billionaire who's doing everything he can because his school is caught in that too.
Yeah, but there's no oil money in Southwest Virginia, man.
No, it's West Virginia, Virginia Tech, NC State. Iowa State, Kansas State, like these are all places where they are deeply passionate about their college.
Yeah, they're no less fans. They deserve nothing more or less than a fan of Michigan or Ohio State or you know, Alabama. That's what I built a career off saying this, and it feels like it almost feels like heresy to a certain group of people in the media. But we have to represent these folks because, Andy, they don't have there isn't even we can't even figure out what the best possible scenario
the
for these people
is. If you turn around, if you're in that group and you double middle finger the SEC and the Big Ten, you don't help yourself at all.
They've been double middle fingering them for the last 25 years.
Because they can.
You're right. So if you middle finger back to the giant who's been grinding you with his heel for 25 years, I'm not going to say, hey, man, that was a bad move. They're out of moves. There is no move. You're telling me there's no move for Iowa State.
You're making good money right now.
You're essentially treated as cannon fodder to these two, to the big two, in the way that we talk about the sport, in the way that we structure
the
postseason.
So the other option is you move down a quote-unquote level, and you play at that level.
I don't have a solution, but a reckoning will arrive.
That's the other option.
A reckoning will arrive.
You have to decide what you want to be.
We are talking about tens of millions of fans, of former players, of administrators, of schools, of universities, of fan cultures dotted throughout this sport that we are somewhat willingly setting on fire right now. I feel for Iowa State because in a lot of ways, Andy, they're way more screwed than ULM is. Because the expectation is
ULM
never going to
match
reality.
They never tasted it.
No, but there was also no expectation that ULM is, we're going to go, hey, we're going to Big 12 Media Days, Ross, and we're going to come see you at Big 12 Media Days, and we're going to tell you about how we expect to compete for national titles. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? That's what the athletic director at Iowa State and Kansas State and all those schools have to do. They have to look us in the eye and say, we're going to compete with Alabama and Michigan and Texas for national titles. And we're going to go, you know what we do? We write it down. We go, oh, okay, cool. Well, they're expecting to. No, they're not. We have to acknowledge the delta. And if I kind of feel for Jamie Pollard here. He just had a bad moment and said the thing that everybody knows.
So what would your solution be to that?
We don't have a solution. We've put these people on an island. We're going to burn down a significant portion of the sport.
What put them on an island? The paying the players what they should be paid?
No, honestly, the inevitable march of time. Once we took this thing out of amateurism and started to really, truly acknowledge the corporatization of college sports, there was no choice.
They didn't have a chance before, though, when they were policing spread on bagels and free spaghetti dinners and free car washes. Iowa State still didn't have a chance to win the national title.
The old legislating competitive equity.
No,
I think we're more lopsided.
If anything, the recruitniks among us would say, hey, Steven, more teams have an equitable spread of blue chip talent now because of the portal. So you could have like justifying 24 versus 12.
But you need the money and not everybody's going to have the money.
I'm not saying that Iowa State should hold serve with Michigan and Ohio State. What I'm saying is that we have trained. What am I talking about here? 25 to 40 fan bases who have a ton of history and are very much a part of fabric of the sport, who are now realizing they are about to be left out. This is another chapter of the club, man.
Oh, it is. It is. And like, remember in 2010 when the Pac-10 was trying to take six teams from the Big 12 and become the Pac-16? Remember Kansas? I remember when I was at SI and we sent one of our college basketball writers out to Kansas to do a story, and the administration there was just like, what do we do? Like, we're just hanging on the edge here, and there's like, we're basically waiting on Texas to decide something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They had no control of their fate. Believe me, as someone who's worked in corporate media, I know that feeling. You have no control of your fate, and it has nothing to do with your value. So we have to, I just feel like it can't be done from a management level. This is not me asking Congress to intervene, okay? But exactly. These schools need to sit down and acknowledge a reality where they need to figure out what best serves their purposes over the next generation. Because I think chasing at the heels of the Big Ten is not it.
I think people need to be realistic about where they are.
Yes, I totally agree.
Because you can create a successful endeavor that isn't Michigan, that isn't Ohio State.
Yes. This is what I've learned. This is what I have learned studying the last two or three years, the way European soccer is structured. There are plenty of revenue opportunities. There's plenty of positive fan moments at that Division II level, in, depending on what country you're in and all that. I'm not saying, I don't want to be the naive idiot who says, like, we should treat NC State and Michigan and Ohio State the same way. I'm not, no. What I am saying is right now, we've offered these fan bases no solutions, and we keep telling them they're about to go extinct. And this is why people are pissed off.
The part where it's not the club, because this actually would probably allow you to solve for some things, is English soccer had relegation.
Yeah, and promotion.
Which is why when they formed the Premier League, they included relegation.
And promotion.
And promotion. If you had promotion and relegation, this would be a lot less dire.
And I don't think that'll ever happen.
There'll be a chance. Yeah. And now there's not.
Because there's a chance.
I don't think I don't think that could ever happen in America, which is maybe the most poison of all pills when we talk about college sports. Because I don't think you would ever allow Memphis or Boise a route in at the expense of, just pulling names here, like South Carolina or something, you know, or Mississippi State.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, this, if you don't follow, again, I'm not a huge soccer guy, but I have been fascinated by the Premier League's end of this season. Is Tottenham Hotspur going to get relegated?
Yeah.
Right now, they're probably not.
Yeah.
No. They play Chelsea. We're recording this on Tuesday. They play Chelsea today.
I have found that Tottenham Hotspur is the preferred soccer team amongst American sports writers. I'm not really sure why, but it's also like, you know how every American college football writer likes the Braves and Jason Isbell? Yeah. Apparently Tottenham is in there too. Well, I don't know why.
And people ask, okay, what does that mean if they got relegated? It would essentially be like making the Steelers play in the UFL.
Which I would enjoy.
Like, that level of team that has been that successful. Like, you're in the UFL now. Good luck.
I mean, what we're seeing in a completely bastardized way is Cody Campbell trying to promote Texas Tech.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unofficial.
And we've seen it in the past. We've seen Utah promote itself.
Yeah. TCU.
By winning a lot.
TCU is I think the best example of the last 30 years. But you know how they did it? This is where I'm going to do the capitalist conservative side here, Andy. You know how TCU did it?
Pulled themselves up by the bootstraps.
They spent a ridiculous amount of money.
They did.
By the way, so did Louisville.
They did. Now, I will argue that they also handled things rather wisely, like Chris Del Conte during an economic downturn found out there were a lot of people who wanted to build some things if you were willing to pay cash.
Mm-hmm.
So he raised a lot of money and paid cash and paid less for a brand new stadium than anybody's ever going to do again.
He gave me a tour one time. Everything's limestone at TCU, and he had his little hard hat on. And he says baby after every sentence. Ross knows this. I'm sure you've interviewed him. Like, 10 out of 10 experience. Would do again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it is, you're right. It's not easy. It can be done.
Yeah.
But can you become Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama? Probably not. Like,
If gas stays at 460 in Nashville, Texas Tech's got a shot.
Okay, maybe Texas Tech.
Texas Tech's got a shot. Let's figure out how that Strait of Hormuz
We're going to have to watch this. Ross, your story was really good because this is something they are actually talking about. It is actually realistic in terms of could you do it, the breakaway, the separate Big Ten, separate SEC. I'm skeptical about it. Because again, I don't think they would do something that would devalue their TV rights, and that would. But
it would. You would significantly devalue, you think?
I think it would.
The TV rights? Really?
Oh, yeah.
Can I insert a correction really fast? Because I don't want to hear about it in the comments. The current number one team in college baseball is from the Big Ten.
UCLA. UCLA is kicking ass.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear
about ACC representation up there, too.
Without looking, how many there's our
but you're right, probably 70% of the top,
and three schools from Mississippi, as usual,
in
the top 25.
Yes, no pro sports there, buddy. All college baseball in the spring and summer.
In terms of given, there is no greater place than Mississippi in college baseball.
Yep, indeed.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch because, like you said, Ross, they're now moving into the realm of the realistic.
Well, the big question for me, Andy, is like, if they do this, yes, there's a lot of questions. Like, who else do they play? Like, how many sports come over? But like the big question, do they finally collectively bargain?
Mm-hmm. No.
And I think and that
actually
would
get rules and regulation, and they can do that by collectively bargaining. And it's easier to do that by doing it with a small group of programs as opposed to 300.
In the history of sports, you know how this has always worked?
Yeah.
I'll go back to Godfrey. Mm-hmm. Well, we can go to sports entertainment as well.
Mm. Chair
you
shots.
Have a bunch of regional promotions.
Chair shots.
You have a bunch of leagues. It always ends up being just one.
Mm.
Always.
This is the land of opportunity, but you got to go take it.
We will talk to you on Thursday.